My name is Frank Lee, the village philosopher, and the title for the forum this evening will be Federal Cutbacks, Does It Cause Hope or Fear? The way that I would like to handle this particular discussion is to spend the first few minutes not so much in argumentation, but as just sharing some of those hopes and fears. And if I heard one person correctly already, that we may embody both hope and fear as one person, or it may be that some people are more hopeful and some people more fearful. Dale Ruff has agreed to put it on the board, and we'll start writing them down, so we don't want to get too far ahead of him. And we may or may not use that, but sometimes it's nice to be able to see the hopes and fears and see if there's any correlations to them. My hope would be also at the somewhere towards the middle, we might at least ask the question, what are the faith issues or faith resources involved in that? There may or may not be connections. The week is still Sing the Lord's Song, and the thing that I find most frustrating is when we get to fears, if people have fears, how do you sing the Lord's Song when you're afraid? Or in this case, if federal cutbacks means tough times ahead for some people, how do you sing the Lord's Song? That probably might come out later. But let's first just deal with where we come from, how we feel around those issues. If you come from a particular place, like you are a social worker or someone who really directly is involved, you might say that so we know where you're coming from. Don't say that to keep you from talking, however. Just that if you think it's important, that helps us understand better than we would do that. So, if everybody understands the agenda, those who are coming late, we're going to be talking about the federal cutback in funds, especially in areas like social services and so forth. We're not going to be talking, I would like us not to talk so much about the pros and cons of spending more money in military. That could be another time. Instead, that there's cutbacks in this area. And does that cause you personally to be hopeful or fearful? And it's going to be a sharing of where we are, not necessarily teaching each other or taking on the role of expert or putting other people in the expert role. So, if we're ready to begin, why don't we start sharing hopes or fears? And it can be either one, because Dale can then just put on one side or the other. Do we need more clarification first in terms of what we're talking about?
First of all, it should be pointed out that we're still in the gray area. Most of these cuts are not yet law. They have passed one house or the other. They still have to come out of conference. For instance, you have the Social Security cuts. There are many congressmen that were in a position of voting for a package because of the way it was presented to the House that wouldn't vote for it individually in conference committee. So the reduction in Social Security, the elimination of the minimum benefits for those who could not qualify in the 40 quarters category, the reduction in subsidized housing for the elderly, the proposal to push back the retirement age to 68 for everyone and eliminate, well, practically eliminate those who can afford to retire at 62. By reducing the benefit from 80% to 55%. These are areas that are definitely fearful areas for those who are already on retirement or are approaching that age.
Thank you. Let's do a little clarification, because that really needs to be said, the fact that it is not law. Some people are saying that much of what the administration is asking for will happen. But we should be clear on that. I think I happen to sit on a board of directors of a social services in the Prince George's County, the state of Maryland, and our director has been mandated already to cut back and is planning on cutting back 20%, almost as if they automatically buy it. Now, I don't know pros or cons about that, but the fact is there are and will be cutbacks in that area. Are there other clarifying things that need to be said before we begin to talk about our hopes and fears?
There are also some of the programs for expectant mothers, nutritional programs. I know I wrote a letter to my congressman about it, and between the time I wrote the letter and the time he answered, the Senate had clarified that and taken it out. You know, so there are a lot of them that I'm not even sure how they had actually come out.
Well, here in the state of Washington, other example, we CHOR, girl help for the disabled has been eliminated. It's supposed to be covered maybe in the block grants to the state. But if the state has already eliminated the program because they've run out of funds, they're surely not going to take block grant money when they need it for highways or schools or something else and put it into that Shore Girl program.
And how about the college students, Social Security being cut out for college age students and loans?
The loans are huge. In a House hearing just before I left, the loans were re-established back into the federal loans. The BEOG seems to have been removed from reconsideration. They will permit the BEOGs up to $1,400. The BEOGs are the Basic Educational Opportunity Grants, in which they were going to cut them entirely from any federal spending. They had a great deal of NEA, the National Education Association, lobbying, and a lot of student lobbying, and the students really got themselves to their congressman. And if there's anything you need to know about D.C., it is that your congressmen do, in fact, listen to you. And anything that you want to write as a result of tonight or any time, it is important that you do that. It is incredible how one letter from a constituency equals 500 people in the eyes of a congressman. Now, in the immediate area, we don't seem to have any effect at all, almost, because they're so used to us doing this. But if a new person writes a letter, they pay very careful attention, particularly if it's a personal letter, as opposed to that your organization told you to write and you all write the same thing or you all send the same telegram. People do make a difference on the Hill, and it's important to know that, and therefore that it gives more hope on the hope side of your responsibility as a citizen to find out what has happened to all of these. And why it's happening is because your organization and people have taken time to write to your congressman.
And if you scribble in handwriting on a postcard, it has more effect than 5 pages of typewritten material.
A little more clarification in terms of our county. Daycare county run is going out automatically, or in the whole state, and there is cutback in terms of I don't know the right language, but like if I were a mother and had a child and I was home and able to care for the child, but it was felt that the child needed to get out of the home to daycare, that funding is gone. And sometimes affects even those who are on maybe some kind of disability area, the child. It just, the funds aren't there. Those are places they're cutting back.
CETA is also gone.
CETA is cutting back.
Legal services.
Legal services.
Yeah. And how about aid to hunger abroad? In fact, isn't the president in Ottawa this week?
Mm-hmm.
17th and 20th. On the very subject of interest and loans to other countries.
Is that enough for us to now begin to move to hopes and fears? Yes.
Just one comment. I know you don't want to get into more spending for military, but I even have problems saying budget cuts. Because I really think their budget shifts.
Okay.
And maybe if we could just keep that in mind.
Thanks.
Yep. That occurred to me after we decided on this title, Frank, and I think that we should have made a change, because it's not simply budget shifts either. It will be a larger budget than the last Carter budget in total, because of the increase in the military and defense budget. Now, it'll be the rate of growth of the federal budget will not go up as much as has been the case.
And may not match inflation. I think that's where it comes from, that kind of stuff.
But we ought to be clear that the total federal spending is a higher budget this year than it was last year. And there are lots and lots of cuts. And that budget for cutting has been passed by both houses. The point here that was made is an important one, namely, we don't know exactly which will get what. But both houses have passed an overall budget.
Yep.
And there is great cuts there in the human services side of it, and great increase in the defense budget side of it.
Right. And is it agreeable, as much as we might want to do other, can we agree to stick with our hopes and fears around the human services cutting? Okay, can we get at some of those hopes and fears?
Excuse me, there's probably one other thing in the whole educational field is the importance of the block grants to the states, which brings the demise of the health, the education, Department of Education, which will mean all of the specialized programs will be cut, and the state may still have them, but they are not obliged to have them, which will basically interfere with the minority groups, women, the foreign groups, although bilingual will continue, but all of the kinds of specialized programs, even the lunches, will be cut, so that the whole educational system's possibility is going to be cut, and even the block grants end up less and not earmarked education. So any state can decide to take education down any path they want to. All of the teaching assistance centers, which is for sexism, racism, and forms of elitism, really, all but four have been cut. And therefore, even the assistance, if a state wants it, cannot get it as they have in the whole education, which is all dealing with probably lower America besides the woman issue.
Can we put that in a fear? I mean, you said an awful lot. The fear is that if it, when it comes to block grants, there'll be one less, two, that the areas, especially around, what's the language?
Well, all minority groups will.
Advocates or education for minority group, programs for minority in the area of education. Right, will be cut.
Including even some of the handicapped, although they've done quite well with the handicap program as a specialty. They pulled that out, and they pulled one women's program out of the block grants.
Yes, right.
Because it was the cheapest thing to do.
Okay.
But education is effective. They could put, by the way, that student loan back anytime they felt like it, that you no longer could deal with student loans. It's really putting higher education in turmoil in terms of anybody from middle-class America down.
Well, here's a fear I have. They speak of block grants. Does this mean that there will be no restrictions on how the states can spend this money? Can they spend money that previously was spent for education, for highways, for example?
Yes. That is already being done somewhat. In the state of Maryland, that's pretty provable that that's already been done, that we've been putting in highways the money that was meant to go other places.
Yeah, but the block grants means the state's not
even more so.
Yeah, it's
the use of the money.
Incredible control.
Mm-hmm. Isn't this increasing bureaucracy instead of cutting down on it? Suppose you do have programs each state. Let's just suppose that there would be a program that had been cut nationally, but let's suppose each of the 50 states would pick it up. That's 50 bureaucracies to handle, to administer that program, isn't it?
So the fear is that it will increase bureaucracy and therefore more money into putting the program into operation, not get to the people you seek to serve, okay?
Yeah. The hope on the other side of that would be that specific individual states might well be more capable of handling the needs of their state if it is a state that is vitally concerned about the social welfare of its people. And it therefore, in that sense, would cut down the bureaucracy, and the state itself can say, this is what we want. That's the argument which is proposed from the national to.
And there are examples to support that. Massachusetts, if you have a handicapped child, is a very good place to live in. My friends do not take out insurance, the high option insurance, for that reason. The state has all kinds of reputation for caring for that.
Another example from the state of Massachusetts is there will be no physical education for any child in the state with Proposition 2.5 unless an individual county is willing to spend specialized money. And they have fired over 1,000 physical educators in the state, which shows the power of the state. The University of Massachusetts is one huge mess.
Yep.
So it goes by need.
But on the other hand, our state is just going into the idea of having one man in charge of all the social programs in the state and cutting down on the bureaucracy.
So that would be a hope that it could cut down?
North Dakota.
North Dakota.
One of my fears that Joan, has talked about is the elitism, or my fear is that America is going to become more and more a place where only the rich can get an education. And I was lucky enough to get a lot of grants to go to college, but without those, I couldn't have. And that's a fear of mine, that the educated are going to get more educated, and they're going to have children are going to be more educated, and the ones who aren't getting educated and aren't getting a chance to develop the gifts and talents they have is going to get poorer and poorer. And so that the spread between those with money and those without is going to increase in our country. I mean, it's widespread in the world, but maybe I had some hope that we could be different here. That's a fear that...
Your fear that it would even be more based upon wealth than it is already.
Right, yeah. Because now, I mean, the rich can get an education, had DEOG and some other grants, the poor could get an education.
Okay.
I have at least two fears. Being in a big corporation, I've watched these great reorganizations and saving and so forth. All that anybody ever did was shift them over into another column over here, and everything went on the same way. Second, the whole thing of attacking Social Security, attacking welfare, attacking aid to education, attacking this, is the same philosophy that we had in the 30s of divide and conquer. So the politicians are attempting to divide the people and cause them to fight among themselves as to which is going to get what. And we'll all be left more or less out. And of course, there is the other item that for every dollar or so that filters down to the public or gets to anybody that needs it, there's three or four more dollars that goes into the bureaucracy. So in actual fact, they don't save anything unless they get rid of some bureaucracy, which I don't personally believe they ever will.
Okay, but a hope would still be the one that's already up there, that bureaucracy would get smaller.
I have not that hope.
No, okay.
If that hope is realized, then we're going to have a tremendous increase in the unemployed.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we'll draw money from the federal government for unemployment.
Beg your pardon, they'll draw money from the states. Each state has its own unemployment insurance fund. The federal government pays only the administrative cost.
Okay. I don't think they pay some of it.
Yeah. But each state could very quickly go broke. They've been having heavy unemployment in most states for a long time now.
Yeah.
And this is going to increase. Then what?
So if we win, we lose.
That's right.
I would fear riots in the big cities. England, Great Britain, certainly gives us an indication of what could very well. It's happened before, but I would predict it in to a much greater degree.
Okay.
Come winter or then just fall.
Okay, David.
Yeah, I have the fear that the bureaucracy will increase. Kind of what you were saying is. First they throw some money to solve a problem, then they take the money back and they create this instability. And in any organization, when there's instability, the people who survive are the people who are good at climbing up the institution. And the people who do the work are the ones that get cut, particularly when they have hiring freezes. In my area is the environmental area. And if you go to, say, the project engineer level, where they're really, they're really out there doing the work, they've got some 25 to 50 projects, and if you're an engineer, you know you can't have 25 to 50 projects and be a project engineer. So I'm afraid in this instability that the people who will survive in this whole thing are the ones that are the survivors. And yet they want to increase the incomes for the people higher up. They want to decrease the income so people don't want to become bureaucrats. There's a tremendous incentive in education everywhere to be an administrator. Be it in terms of job security, be it in terms of status, income, everything. And somehow we got to get around that to create the incentives for actually doing the work that was originally intended. We don't have that.
Larry?
This relates to the concern about social disorder or the riots or whatever. I would fear an increase of social tensions, and I think fear them even if the Reagan program succeeds. And for this reason, as I understand it, the strategy is to revitalize the economy. A more vigorous economy will then create more jobs and will pick up a lot of folks will be absorbed into the working economy that are at the edges presently. The difficulty there is that there's a considerable time lag between the effects of the cuts in terms of a revitalized economy. It takes a long time if you're talking about the revitalization of industry. That takes, you know, years. But the effects of the cuts are immediate. And what I fear is a serious increase of social tension for that time between, even if eventually the economy is on sounder footing again.
To add to what he just said, we must take into consideration the fact that if new plants are constructed, they will not require anywhere near the number of employees that the old plants require.
That's true.
The new technology runs by computers, not by people.
I have to ask, it seems to me that all this was said 10 years ago that we would be experiencing what we're experiencing. That there would be more and more activity done by machines and computers, and that there would be debt.
Yeah. Of course, what has taken up the slack for, excuse me, has been the increase in service industries.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Jeff, I think it was?
Yeah. I'm not sure where this particular fear falls in the legislation at this point, but my fear is that with all the things that we've talked about so far going on, we may not know exactly what's going on if National Public Radio gets the axe. If we have to rely on network news to find out what's going on, we're in trouble.
Amen.
One thought, he mentioned high technology would tend to create unemployment, was the thought behind it. Yet I think of a country like Japan, highly technical, years ahead of us, they have no unemployment. Their employment rate is practically zero.
No, they don't pay the wages we pay now.
Above and beyond that, the point is with high technology, they can make a product the rest of the world wants. So production more than makes up for it. So they are employed.
Can we put that as a hope? That whether it's a long ways down the pike or not, a real hope is that indeed there may be in the revitalization of industry better jobs and more jobs.
Yep.
Because they've gotten after a huge export, and everybody can't do that.
Yeah, that's a question
that's
I have.
A question I had.
We used to export. Why couldn't we again?
Well, but the thing is, yeah, maybe we'll do that, and we'll be in a better competitive position,
yeah.
And so we'll have more. That means they'll have less. So in a global sense, we still have that problem. You know, the problem that even though we're better competitors in the global sense, it's just going to be like the arms race.
Yeah. Could I ask just a question, and if it doesn't fit, you won't respond to it, but I'm wondering what is the global ramifications and what fears and hopes does that bring, if we're successful or not successful as America? Know that we live within the village of the world. Are there hopes and fears that need to be gotten in touch with there, which is what I heard you alluding to?
Well, are you going to open up the whole sphere of foreign affairs?
I'm just saying, like, for example, if we are successful and we do increase exporting and so forth, does that be a hope for the world? Or if we don't make it, does that become hope or fear for the world? And that may be off, and maybe we shouldn't touch it. So if you don't touch it, that's okay.
Well,
I just open it to your thinking.
My thought is that when you made the statement about our being able to export more, the first thing I thought of is already we're 6% of the world's population and use, you know, an incredible amount of the world's resources. And if we wanted to increase our exports, we're probably going to be using more of the world's resources. And as a person concerned about the global village, and as a Christian who thinks that's part of my responsibility, I'm not sure if that's one of my hopes that we'll be able to export more. Say my hope is that we would convert our economy to a different kind of economy that wouldn't use as many resources and would employ people. So that I think that's important. We should look at the global village.
Your fear would be that we would use even more resources that are limited. Your hope would perhaps be, if we took the converse, that we would adopt a way of life that used less resources.
So that would be one of my hopes, is that we move to labor-intensive.
Okay.
But that really doesn't solve the problem we have. You know, we do have a balance of trade problem, and we do have a problem with keeping, you know, being competitive. And, you know, one of our problems right now is that we've got too much labor, high-cost labor, in to be competitive. So I think, you know, first of all, I don't see a problem with using resources for turning around exporting. I think it's the concern we have is the amount of resources we use to consume ourselves. If you consume resources and turn around and pass up goods on to somebody else, that shouldn't really be a big concern, I don't believe. I wouldn't concern me so much. And secondly, is there's just no way we're going to get out of this problem we have, the zone we have right now with other countries like Japan, if we just continue to say, well, we're going to stop our technological advances and start doing more things by hand. You know, if we think it's bad now in some cases, it's just going to get a whole lot worse. You know, that's not a solution. Unless we want to go off in the world, cut the cords to the rest of the world and live by ourselves. You know, it's not, you know, you don't solve the problem, I don't think, by backing down from technology or being afraid of using resources. I think it's using them wisely.
Okay, Mary?
Who would buy our products? I think is an important question in that there's an increasing debt spiral in the less developed countries. They are borrowing from the World Bank in order to invest in new technologies. The resources that then they sell on the world market, compared to the increasing cost of the technological imports, there is not a same or a similar rate of exchange. So their debts are increasing as they're trying to invest in the kinds of technologies that we export. So I don't see that it would be any but the elite of other societies who might benefit. And there's a widening gap between rich and poor there. And I don't see how increasing U.S. exports would necessarily at all help the global situation and might only turn the debt screw more notches that they're already in.
Everybody get that? Because we're... Okay. Yeah.
The multinational corporations are not improving conditions in the countries to which they go. We know in the underdeveloped world. They're exploiting them, rather. And also developing one crop of economies which is really doing a great deal of harm. That's what you were, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you travel at all in the world, and especially in the underdeveloped world as we have, we know this is true. My goodness, they don't get two hoots. And this is no concern of the multinationals. In 99% of the cases.
Just to clarify that, it happens kind of innocently, I think, sometimes. Maybe it's just, but the issue, like pineapple from a country where the whole country makes pineapple to feed us and the rest of the world, we assume we could get corn and rice back to them and make money off the deal, but it never gets to the people. It doesn't get to the people, and it gets to be just a great big mess and starvation and hunger. You're saying America and the multinationals have to ask questions whether we're not very, very involved. That's what you're saying. Right. So it's hard to believe that trying to deal with this situation, we're going to be concerned about the world at that point. Okay, yes?
When the government starts coming to power in one of these countries, that forces some equalization. The new government of Nicaragua may reveal the standard brand about bananas. We're paying more for bananas now, but the people working for the banana companies, food companies, in Nicaragua are now getting a living wage.
Can I get us back to hope and fear here? And I love what we're talking about now, and maybe others do, but in case some don't, and you tune for the forum on hope and fear. Do we have them up? I don't know, Dale. You had an awful job. You've been watching him, but do we have the hope and fears up? Okay, so you're talking about your fear is that when the state begins to take the block grant, that there will be a pecking order of priorities, and that there are going to be lots of needy people who indeed don't get the services they need. Okay. Can I throw another hope out? Hope that I hear in the area I live in is that there's a hope that we who live close to the scene will be able to better manage our money than they do better government. Okay. My fear, on the other hand, is that the states that manage well I'd like to live in, but I don't always choose where I want to live. And then there'd be lots of states that really have 180 of what I would like to live in, and yet it's one country, and yet we'd be like, all of a sudden, I think 50 countries. That's a fear.
You don't mean building up the oil supply, you mean cutting down the consumption. That's because you and I and our neighbors have been cut down on our consumption so drastically that we cost the oil companies like sugar.
No, it's 17.
The whole thing tonight seems like the other states are sitting around and dying horse and cutting it up to see who gets sick. So the real concern should be to revitalize the whole federal system by production of different hospitals. And there will be nothing to divide in the past. And that should come first instead of what are we going to do with the new people in the past hospital by turning down the people.
You're really kind of challenging the administration's agenda. You think the prior agenda should have been how to revitalize
the institution? That's the best thing.
I have not spent so little money, I don't think, in all my life. My folks should probably check that. But I haven't spent a penny this 10 days. And it feels so good. I mean, see if I can make it all the way to the end. So I'm not going to buy the tape for the last day. But, you know, you're right. Now I am. It's gotten so bad they accost people on the street to beg for money.
They're going to have that on
Facebook. No. Oh, no, I haven't been it all night. Sorry. There's about 15 minutes left, and I was in theory thinking, and maybe it can be made practice, seeing what we said and maybe remembering some of what we said and the tone of what we said, is there a way in which you can look at it as people of faith, what are the issues involved, and maybe even like you've already said, some of the resources of faith that can be seen here? That has not really been the thinking move. We go into politics, and it's like we leave our faith and how we go and talk politics about the issues. I wonder if there's some way we can marry them in this forum and do some good here.
And we could go back to our home churches and present the problems for discussion that we're going to have here and see what we should do to activate the church, the synod, whatever it is,
and take on some of these programs that the government is going to abandon. So we need to know the rest of Congress. This will be a little more difficult. You don't know who to ask. You've got to set it up. But we can ask through our individual congregations.
We are, the whole solution to the problem is the visitor that's being deposed. The ordinary laws are fixed. That's about where we stand. We've got to repair it, it's worse than the problem. I've just taken over all this stuff that we never did a decent job of anyhow. And if I could say 7,100, you think they killed the young people that we were really bad. We're going to have to build a lot of these jobs we lost in the first place if they go.
Much has been said about Massachusetts. One of the background items on the federal highway program was the fact that when they were giving the state money, to put in highways, the grass in Massachusetts was so terrible that they stopped the program and started a federal highway program.
About the relationship of 63 for a consumer. And I wish my own information had a serious kind of hope that that's the way that we rescued this evening. And the text that in the story of the day, three days, and the text gave me another problem to draw on. There are times when I think that we don't begin to understand 63 because the 63 were formed and centuries and centuries and centuries of human experience. So, unlike our own, we've had, this century has been one of the great exceptions in human history because of an unprecedented aftermath. The scriptures have talked about the abundance of and the lack of joy under conditions that we would label scarcity that we cannot imagine tolerating. And I fear that lots of folks are going to get hurt. I would also think that we might find ourselves possibly, if we can get out in a certain mindset, that it seems affluent, and accepted of it, that we might possibly rediscover the reality of the abundant life under conditions of material modesty. And one just has to ask, why would a thriving community, humanly speaking, religiously speaking, under conditions that we find we would call marriage and deprivation. Now, that requires a theorem that we're also not accustomed to, a quest for equality, neither poverty nor wealth, but sufficiency. And maybe that's a genuine hope that one discovers from the length of the 63rd, but we didn't get up because we spoke in an exception in human story, an exception of cancer.
I would have a hope that kind of runs along that theme, that characters would perhaps be forced to see that they are called to be and can be centers of people who have fighting for justice and
the sharing of the goods with brothers and sisters in the neighborhood as an agenda. But it's not our peripheral, it's not, that is the agenda of the church. Yeah. Marilyn.
The church in Tacoma, just a number of years ago, the pastor, when putting the listing in the wildlife in the church, number one, of the yellow pages in the church, church section, listed church phone number and a church phone number, and said, if you need anything, call anytime. And he began getting phone calls, and he could not handle the responses on his own. So he had to start calling people in the congregation. He thought he was nuts to do this. And there's a woman, for example, there's a woman who had a couple of kids, and they were all being abused by the father and husband. And so someone who thought that he was crazy to do this, he called them and said, listen, I have this family. They need a place to stay and so she can find work, etc. Anyway, this mushroom within the congregation, and pretty soon the talk about compassion that they did on Sunday became very real. And they literally invested their time and their money. And a lot of people who, you know, they didn't know from Adam or Eve. But I think that if we would lose some of our tight grip on what we think we have to have in order to be materially sufficient, I think we really can operate with mentality. If we really lived on what day we can, we'd be free to serve in a lot of ways, and we'd be in our lives. And some people do that now.
We hire our pastors to do that now, and when they do too much of that outside of our own church, we then complain that the institutions are not doing it, and we get into that spiral. But in fact, someone else will be doing it. And we blame those and you're not doing it well. And in fact, it is our job, and you're not doing it well. And I would only suggest that because we're not doing it well, there's no reason to give it away. There's no reason to give it away. It in fact needs to come back to us.
You know, it's a ministry program, too. Around the churches of many of the denominations going together. And I know that kind of working in the church program and the church in the house. That's an example of that. It is a good standard program. That's a really fine program. It's covered by people of different churches, across different parishes.
One of my fears is that we have ghettoized ourselves rich and poor and middle class. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if we are neighbors to those in need, and if we even speak for them this night, or are they things we talk about because we've heard or read, because the poor are not our brothers and sisters. And would they not suffer alone once again?
In your program, you do begin to get close to them. You just begin now.
Yeah, I heard you. I
was
just thinking.
Just to begin. It's only a start.
One must comment that until you've gone into some of the third world countries, you don't know what poverty is. You are not poor, it's poor here. Don't wear it like they do in Central America, for example. Or in Argentina or Brazil.
But they don't have to look.
Oh,
how
do they do
They don't remember the numbers they don't. India, for example, they don't, you know, not able to do that. But that involves, it's not too hard in Washington, D.C. for the poorest of poor to do the richest. Or even the next breed up here that has nothing to do with that one.
Mexico City can be compared to Washington, D.C.
Could I, coming to an end, seems to me one of the things I'm hearing in terms of faith is our faith itself is being thrown into question. The question of who is our God? What is our agenda? That and the role of the church.
Happens that
and you have been subject to support it, isn't it? It's actually, you needed some of the poor people, and you need people mm-hmm. who are maybe it can happen with more and more programs not being funded, and maybe it's many people are going to they're gonna cut touching their own lives by the nonsense situation. But the child, the parents, if they go back and the rest had to realize that their grandchild wasn't getting the money that he being cared for, and maybe as it gets cut back and back, people are gonna be able to but maybe it's a whole thing for the process of hope or whatever. But when you touches our lives with everyone who are somehow having a family, may not be intending it, maybe they have some handicap or something. Perhaps when people see the little that you know in life, then there's that thing that needs to have in you.
Okay. Any others in the last minute or two?
Just to find with you that finally the hope only makes sense when we face the reality of those fears. I hope that the comments that we do that. I hope to have that.
And maybe hope comes when we become clear for some of us that we and our brothers and sisters who make the church have not been brothers and sisters to the oppressed. That we have a God who has. And the people who are oppressed that I have known have been singing the song sometimes more refreshingly than we've sung it in our churches. And that maybe it's finally time we join the God who is already there in celebrating the gift of life and equality and sharing and a God who's far and yet also close.